My name's Pete. I'm an alcoholic. And tonight's a great night, you know. I'm here, and I'm healthy, and I'm sober. And I guess the sober part is all a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the healthy part is between my ears, and that goes minute to minute. But at this moment, I'm feeling kind of healthy, so you know, hopefully, I'll have something positive to share with everybody tonight. And that healthy part between my two ears, that also comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have a thinking problem, and that was always the crux of my problem. You know, it started between my ears, and it started there from the earliest recollection that I have, that I had some type of a problem with you people, and I was just naturally dissatisfied with life. And like I said, that goes back to my earliest recollection of my life, you know, early grade school. You know, I had this innate fear of school because I thought that I was I thought I was different. I thought I was different because I couldn't learn, you know. Kindergarten through third was a complete disaster for me, you know. I went to school every day absolutely petrified that the teacher would call on me. And I mean, what a way to live your life, you know? I mean, I lived for 3 o'clock. I lived for cookies and milk, lunchtime, playground. I mean, that's when I excelled and felt free and, you know, felt like I was part of something, you know? But when that whistle blew and I needed to be inside those classroom walls, it was pure hell for me. Somewhere along during the course of the third grade, I got examined for an eye exam, and they realized that I was born with astigmatism and that I read letters backwards and upside down and numbers backwards, and this was directly connected to why I had this learning problem. I couldn't read, you know, and I certainly didn't know how to add two and two together and come out with four, you know. So, it kind of explains it. And from there, you know, my experience from that point on was I was trying to catch up, but I still thought I was retarded, you know. I mean, let's be real here. This is what I thought I was, and when it came to schoolwork. So grammar school was a really tough experience for me. And that fear didn't just go away just because I got a pair of glasses, you know. I still didn't know how to read, and I wasn't particularly bright to begin with, so it was really tough for me to catch up, and it took me a long time. And the other side of the coin was that I excelled athletically. You know, athletically, I was the most talented kid in grammar school. Had a basketball legacy, you know, of accomplishments, and went on to play basketball in high school, and went to college on a basketball scholarship, and played basketball in college, and amongst all my other extracurricular activities that I was so, you know, adept at, which, of course, was all about drinking and drugs and a party, because I couldn't stand being with me. And I don't know, you know, I don't know why I felt the way I did, and I don't know why I thought the way I did. And I certainly didn't understand why I drank the way I did, which was always different and in excess and kind of like apart from my friends and buddies. And, you know, why was I always completely loaded by the time we just were going out at night, you know? Why was I lit up from the very get-go, you know? I don't know. That's just the way I drink. I drink with one purpose. You know, oblivion is my objective, because then I don't have to perform, impress, I don't have to do anything. You know, the next day it was, oh, you know, I'm just so, you know, and, you know, that's the whole thing, you know, because I don't have to deal, you see. And all of that peer pressure, you know, I don't have to deal with that, you know, living up to your expectations or trying to be who I think you think I'm supposed to be. Way, way too much pressure, too much responsibility for me. And so I hid behind all of that, all of those feelings of maybe being inferior, maybe being less than or not enough or not living up to what you thought I was. You know, afraid you'd find out who I really am, you know. It's insane, I know. But if you're sitting in this room, you probably ID with all of that type of insane thinking. And the thinking, okay, is what brings me back to alcohol and drugs as a solution over and over again. You know, I went through my school years, you know, looking for every opportunity I could to party, as we called it, you know. And when I got out of school, you know, I got right in the bartending business. And I was a bartender, and I played basketball in basketball leagues. And, you know, I thought I was pretty cool, you know. And that's what I did. And I had no idea what I was going to do. When all my classmates in college were looking for jobs and, you know, going to these job fairs and going to Wall Street and interviewing, I was hanging out, you know, because I was too cool. I didn't need that. My life was just going to take place, you see. But I certainly didn't need what they needed, or I didn't have to run after what they were running after. And the truth is, I was afraid, you know. So I stood behind it with an attitude of, I'm better than, or what I'm doing tips it, slick and cool, and what they're doing is kind of lame because, you know, I don't think I really want to go to work anyway. You know, so I did the next best thing. You know, I got in the bartending business, and that's what I did, and, you know, I had it going on, and I'm up till 5 o'clock in the morning every night. And that's a recipe for, you know, instant burnout. And somewhere along the line, I stumbled into a job. I got so lucky because somebody came into the restaurant and they're talking to me and I'm saying, you know, I think I'm interviewing for a job, you know, I think I'm ready to get a job, you know, kind of thing. And ends up, the guy gets me an interview with the company and next thing you know, they want me to go to work for them. And I'm just kind of moving through life. I swear, you know, my mother always said I had some kind of a guardian angel on my shoulder. And I was, you know how mothers are, you know, but I look at my life and it's been amazing. It's been just amazing, my life. So, you know, I get a company car and I'm driving around in the territory, you know, and I got to roll the windows down because there's so much smoke in the car that I can't see out the front window, you know. And I majored in, you know, biology or gardening or whatever you want to call it. I like to grow things. I have a green thumb. If you come to my house today, you'll see exotic plants in my home because I have a green thumb, and I always did. And I like to sell things. You know, I'm very entrepreneurial. And so I took advantage of these skills. I learned how to put these skills to very good use, you see. And it made me very special, you know. In that community of people, and they looked up to me, and they valued what I had to offer, you know. And I had an incredible obsession with pot. I mean, I smoked pot every day, and I always wrestled with this issue. You know, I couldn't like completely smoke out and drink the way I wanted to because that meant, you know, out to sea in a flat spin. I just couldn't handle the two. That was one of my big life issues early on, you know. Which do I do? And that, what would you do? Which one would you give up? You see, this is interesting conversation, you know. And one that I might add that normal people probably didn't partake in. But for me, it was a big issue in my life. And I finally came to grips with that. And I gently, you know, moved away from, you know, my drug-induced, you know, haze and into, you know, my alcoholic, let's say, pattern, my cycle, as I like to call it, you know, the cycle, the alcoholic cycle. But that took years to happen, and it was just really, you know, one of the drugs of choice for me was in my second marriage, you know, the foot came down and that was just no longer going to be allowed in the household. So that kind of helped me make the decision there. As much as I tried, and as much as I tried to manipulate the situation so that it was always present and accounted for, but I had nothing to do with it, it just kind of caught up with me. You know, that particular series of lies, you know, eventually caught up with me, because you keep telling the same lie over and over, it just tends to, you know, lose steam. And that's what happened. My credibility was kind of running out in that area, and then I had to give that up. And that was very, very tough. But, you know, I look back on it, it was nothing like, you know, what it was like for me and King Alcohol. That was a completely different situation by the time that came to fruition, when I had to actually get real with where I was and who I was and what my problem was. Completely different. Being an alcoholic, you know, I understand what the cycle is, you know. The cycle involves three components for me. You know, the mental part, you know, that tells me drinking's the solution. And everything about my life is all about drinking, and that's what I think about. And that's what I lie about, you know, just tell a couple of good lies, you know, to justify my behavior or what I need to do. And of course, now I understand that part of the dishonesty was all the things that I wasn't talking about. Well, the whole areas of my life that I felt compelled that I needed to hold over here that were really important stuff, you see, that needed to be kept secret. You know, there are things that I just can't tell her, you know, that I need to keep that, you know, under wraps, you know, because this is my, you know, my alter ego, my separate life, you know, that's like under the staircase kind of thing. And that's another part of my, you know, my problem, you see. Telling the truth is difficult. You see, if I tell the truth, you know, I might lose control of the result. And of course, I'm all about the result. So I can't necessarily divulge all the information, you see, because I got to control the environment and the result and what you think. So I've got a thinking problem. I also have a physical problem that really differentiates me from normal people. And it's part of the cycle. That once I have alcohol in my system craves more alcohol. And so what do? I drink more alcohol. I may pass out, but I got alcohol in my system, and so the natural thing to do the next day is to start drinking again. And two drinks, and I'm off to the races, because there I am. Alcohol is in my body, it has a blood alcohol level of whatever XYZ equals, and I need to be there. And when I'm in that cycle, I don't know how long it's going to last, and I don't know where it's going to take me, and I don't know what I'm going to do. That's my truth. And I got that truth in these rooms. So if I got this mental thing, this physical thing, and then I have this spiritual thing, this discomfort, this dissatisfaction with life, you know, this general dissatisfaction with you, me, and especially with you, and that's part of my problem, you see? And you take the spiritual thing and the mental thing and the physical thing, and it creates a cycle. And I'm in the alcoholic cycle, and I don't know how to break it. And it just gets worse. The results are always worse. The last 2 years of my alcoholism were completely different than the first, say, 20 years of my alcoholism, or whatever number of years. You know, I started drinking when I was 15. I don't know, maybe I was 14 the first time I got drunk. But I'd say I was around 15 or so when I started thinking about it all the time. How I was going to do it, where I was going to do it, who I was going to do it with, how we were going to get it. You know, the whole routine you go through when you're 15. It's not that easy to get. And I started walking into bars in our town when I was, I think around 16, 17. They basically serve anybody. And then on top of that, when I was in high school, the drinking age my senior year in high school was 18. So I stepped right into that, you know. I mean, my gosh, I died and went to heaven. I officially had arrived in this world. And so I get clear with that, and I certainly wasn't clear with any of those things, by the way, as an active alcoholic. I understand what the cycle is today. I understand how I've got it. I understand how, let's say, the third part that I mentioned tonight, the spiritual part, affects the mental part, which affects my life today. But I don't know those things as an active alcoholic. No idea. All I know is that I am dissatisfied, unhappy, think about killing myself, have everything I think I wanted in life. At least I had everything I thought that you thought I should have in life. It looked the way I thought you thought it should look, you see? But I'm thinking about killing myself. What is up with that? You divorce the first one to be with the second one. You're with the second one and all you want to do is kill her and kill yourself. It's like, what happened here? She's not doing what she's supposed to do. Doesn't she understand? I divorced the first one to be with the second one and she's not doing it correctly. And it caused all kinds of problems, I gotta tell you. A lot of domestic problems going on in that house. Not a lot of love. And I'm thinking it's okay. She'll get over it. Last night's episode was last night. Now I am in the fix-it mode, you know? That's like that cycle went over and over and over, you know? Punching holes in walls. Driving cars into garage doors, thinking the door was up or down. You know, I mean, I don't know how many times I made that woman just cry over my hysterical screaming and yelling and just like, I mean, we could be in a bar and I am just gone, right? And I remember walking around in bars or being in bars with people and I am so completely gone. I'm thinking to myself, why can't I drink like just water? I remember these thinking, why can't I just, you know, like have a coffee? I can't. And I'm flagging the bartender down, you know, for another shot of Old Bushmills and another beer. And I'm thinking to myself, there's something wrong. Now, I have no idea of my condition. I don't understand myself at all. But I'm thinking, what is wrong here? Why can't I just relax and just kind of like water it down now? You know, like, let's just turn it down. Maybe I might be able to drive the car home tonight. Unbelievable stuff. And the last 2 years were insane. And I think you've heard me share before. I came home on Friday night. She's packed in the living room, ready to go. She leaves, never comes back. And all I do is try to get her back. And I go on my last run. My last run was after my second wife left, and I don't remember that much about it, to be honest with you. But I do remember the detox part that led up to my first AA meeting, and I remember the one conversation I had with someone I hadn't seen in 2 years. When this person, I said on the phone for the very first time in my life, and I think I want to stop drinking. And this person was sober at AA, and he started 12-step with me on the phone. And this guy was so much worse than I ever was. And I look now at that as my first divine intervention, the first, let's say, you know, too much of a coincidence to ignore that was a profound experience for me. Whether he lied to me in that 12-step, told me things that were not true, that I needed to hear, whatever it did, it got me to go to an AA meeting. And I'm one of the very lucky ones to stand here tonight and say that I never needed to go out and experiment again. I never needed to go and have another drink. I considered at least three, in the first year of sobriety, three episodes that I almost went out over the edge. And again, divine intervention intervened. And really put me in another place, in a safe and protected place, with other alcoholics or a phone call or something happened that got in the way of me going to a bar and going back to what I do. Having said all that, life today is pretty amazing, and it's contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Flat out, that's what it is. And it's how I go about maintaining a spiritual condition is what it's all about. And it's so easy if I just follow a few simple rules. It's so easy. And then when my spiritual condition isn't right, I gotta ask myself, why am I not following these few simple rules? What got in the way? You know? Life. something good. God put things in my life. God continually keeps putting things in my life that create challenges for me, different types of challenges. I look at the first year of sobriety as the most unhappy year of my life and as the greatest year of my life. Because one of the decisions I made was to turn everything over to my sponsor and let him help me make the smallest to the biggest decisions, whatever they were. And I never did things like that. I rolled on my own. I didn't ask people for help. That's the last thing I want to do, is ask people for help. And so when I look back on that first year, it was amazing, you know, going about life that way, and having an experience with the 12 steps, and being as honest as I was capable of being honest at that time. I had an experience very early in sobriety that where I was put in with a small group of men, and my sponsor took us through all 12 steps, and I made my amends to the best of my ability. I had an experience, and it gave me a foundation to live sober. As imperfect as it was, and it was very imperfect, it gave me a foundation, it gave me the tools to develop, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. I can't maintenance my spiritual condition if I don't have any tools to work with. And today I look at the 12 steps as my tools to live life. You know, sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous, synonymous as one, give us all kinds of stuff. They give us this fellowship. They give us these rooms. They give us this wonderful meeting to go to here on Tuesday nights. They give us our home groups. They give us sponsees to work with. There's so many opportunities to give back. But I have to be part of that in order to reap the benefits. And it's not just about the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's what I do out there. I believe that AA is preparing me to live life. Because I don't know how to live life. I don't know how to live in a relationship with a woman successfully. I don't know what the meaning of unconditional is, because everything I do for you is conditional. That's just the way I'm built. That's my truth. You know, you could run your car into the side of this church, okay, and crash your car, and I would think of, the first thing that would come to my mind is, how's that going to affect my day? You know, is this going to inconvenience me now? You know, I'm supposed to be. Where am I supposed to be? You know, what time is this meeting going to be over? That's who I am. The only defense I have against me is this higher power that we find out about in step two. And I'm not ready for that unless I really understand this alcoholic cycle, how it applies to me, my relationship to alcohol, what is my plight. If I'm not clear on that, I don't want to come to believe. I don't want to make any decisions. I just want to be okay. Right here. Right now, man. I'm grooving. I'm okay, you see? But as soon as there's a tremor in the force, I'm like all over the place. And then I get a resentment. And then I get a fear. And now I'm dissatisfied. And then I get all kinds of problems. And I'm going to go isolate. And then I'm going to drink. And then I'm going to drink. Because I have no choice. I can't live in disharmony, discomfort, pain, resentment, self-pity. I can't live in being dishonest. Can't do it. Could do it when I was younger, when I was drinking. That wasn't too hard. I didn't know any other way to live. I hung around with people that explained to me that this was the way to live life. You see, my heroes in the bartending business were, you know, living life in a way that, you know, you might not aspire to or you would want your kids to. And you see, they're explaining to me the facts about how to live life. I thought that was pretty cool. These were my mentors, and I picked it up real quick, you see, because it was attractive to me. It was cool. Alcoholics Anonymous is about preparing us to live life outside of these rooms. I could be a good AA in here, safe and protected. I could be happy and smiling in here. But how am I reacting to life to the world, to my significant other, to my boss, co-workers that I have to interact with. What am I bringing? You know, what am I doing? If I haven't can come to believe that there is a power out there greater than me, and I haven't made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, there's no way that I'm going to get honest in 4 and 5. I'm not going to look at myself in 6 and 7, and I'm certainly not going to go and tell you that I'm sorry that I did whatever it was I did. And I'm not going to talk to my sponsor, and I'm not going to get sponsees. I'm not going to have anything to give back. And in a very short time, I'll be drunk again, and once I drink, the cycle starts. And I have no choice about that. So I think the longer I've stayed sober, and the more clear these things come to me, that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You know, I never graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day is a day when I must bring the vision of God's will into all my activities. Do you believe that? I can tell you that when I do, my life is amazing. When I am so spiritually centered that when I look at you, I see God. When I walk down the hall at work and I say hello to people, I contemplate the presence of God. I have days like this. It's amazing. I got so much power at 5 or 6 o'clock that night, I could knock a wall down. But take the same peak and take a day filled with fear, resentment, self-pity, dishonest type thinking, whatever the case, whatever particular host of character defects might be present. I am so wiped out by 5 o'clock, you might as well just stick a fork in me, send me home like in a wheelbarrow, because I have no power. I'm done. It's all emotional stuff for me. And the difference is so radical, you know. God's will, Pete's will. Which is it going to be? Well, God's will, I have to consciously seek. That's my experience. Pete's will, I don't even have to think about it. If I'm not seeking God's will, it's Pete's will. Unconsciously, there it is. Boom. And you know how I realize it? Certainly there's just a little tremor in the force. I get a little information I don't want to hear. She tells me something that doesn't kind of sit right with me. And all of a sudden, I am completely sideways. Just like that. And that's how I find out that Pete's will is present. Because it's just the way I'm built. So, you know, spiritual principles, I've found Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps of AA, are things that I continually have to practice. If I don't practice it, I lose it. How do I practice spiritual principles? I have to be in the steps, either having an experience myself or guiding someone else through that work. When I guide someone else through the work, I'm teaching. By teaching, I learn. I see myself in new people. Or in whatever alcoholic I get to work with, I see pieces of myself, my own truth. Keeps me green, keeps me honest, keeps me on the beam. I have to pray and meditate in the morning. That's where it starts for me. If I am so centered and so together that I'm doing an evening review or even calling and going through a period where I've committed to sharing it with another alcoholic at night, the residual effect of that is tremendous. I can't even put a measurement to it. And I do that from time to time. What happens is, why don't I do it all the time? Life is in session. I got up too late. I was tired. I went to bed. I didn't do my evening review. I haven't had a new sponsee, and I'm not working with anybody. You know, there's all kinds of things that I can stand on the sidelines with. But Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of action. Just because I've had an experience with the 12 steps, I've been through the work, I had an experience, now what? What do I do now? I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for the experience to happen. I got to be in the steps again. The action is, and the experience, and the gift is, giving it away. That's what it's all about. So I've seen people have an experience in the 12 steps and they're drunk. Because they fail to enlarge and perfect their spiritual experience. I have to be moving forward. I say it all the time. The great lie in sobriety is, I'm okay, right here, right now. And the truth, that's the furthest thing from the truth. Because if you are alcoholic, there is no way that you can sit on a fence and you're going to be okay. You might be okay for a day or two, but you're going to fall off the fence in a very, very short amount of time. Either I'm going forwards or backwards. Backwards towards a drink, forwards towards God. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever your conception of God is, that's your conception. That's what you found in step two. That's what you developed over the years. That's what you're developing and seeking. No one can tell you what it is, and no one can take it away from you. I venture to say that everyone in this room has a different conception of God. It's all personal to each and every one of us, and that's one of the things that makes this program so beautiful and so wide and roomy. When I hear people say, I can't handle two and three, no way, man. That's just a convenient excuse for doing nothing. How can you say that? Step two, came to believe. Is there something in this universe greater than you? Well, yeah. Okay, there you go. Made a decision. Made a decision to do what? Finish the steps. That's it. There's nothing else. We're simple people that want to complicate everything, or you say we're complicated people that complicate everything. I don't care. Alcoholics want to complicate things. Because that way, I got wiggle room, you see? I don't have to do it. I'm not down with two and three. I can't get with two and three. I don't like this God thing. Hey, it's your choice. You know? You want to live in spiritual principles or die an alcoholic now? You know, is it that radical? Gee whiz. Well, let's take a look at that. Let's spend a week in the first 43 pages of this book. And let's see what our identification is. Well, geez, these seem like really extreme cases in the book. Well, do you ID with any area of the way these people thought, felt, or dreamt? You know, just to what degree do you ID with that? The thinking, the feeling, and the drinking. And I'm sure if you're in this room and you read those first 43 pages with another alcoholic and you talk and you share and you identify, the chances are real good that you're in the right place and you have your truth. Either I am or I'm not an alcoholic. And that's critical to my enthusiasm to do the work. Do I really need a solution? I'm feeling okay right now. I always made my own decisions. Yeah, that life of yours looks pretty good, you know? Where'd you say you were living? Where are you working these days? You know, it's my life is really is Alcoholics Anonymous. That's just what it is. I was married again. I'd like everybody to know. I'll make an announcement here for the third time. But I know plenty of guys in AA who've been married like four or five or six times. So I've got plenty of room, plenty of wiggle room, if you will. But I have all intentions of this being the last time. It's very different in sobriety. I've been sober almost 14 years, and I've been single the whole time. And she walked out on me, you know, at the end there, at that second one. Oh, yeah, you betcha she did. And I've been single ever since, you know. I've been the head of the He-Man Women Haters Club. And Chris has been vice president. I've been president, Chris has been vice president. Ooh, Mary Beth's here. Sorry about that. So I got married again, and it's been an amazing, you know, God works in strange and mysterious ways. My latest revelation in terms of sobriety and everything I've basically shared with everybody tonight is this. God puts things in our life to challenge us spiritually. If I stay single for the rest of my life, I'm going to be at a certain plateau, and my threshold for pain will be whatever it is, okay? But being married, okay, all of a sudden, my threshold for pain has to rise to a whole other level. And my whole level of surrender and spiritual relief changes and goes up, you know, proportionately to my spiritual pain. So, I'm challenged with all this stuff that I'm like, wait a minute, I thought I was being a nice guy. I hurt your feelings. What the hell did I do? You know, I thought I was. Let me go read the book. You know, it's just amazing, amazing how I get to look at myself this time, sober, trying to do my best in Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to work these principles as best I can. It's just opened my eyes, and I feel like it's another opportunity for me to grow. And, you know, and that's outside these rooms. I need to take what I learned here. I need to take what I practice here, and I need to apply it to my life. At work, okay, we're going through a major reconstruction. We're going to let go of a bunch of people next week. Rumors flying all over the place at work, you know. And I'm trying to maintain a professional disposition and confide in certain management team members and get people involved in decisions and trying to be a good team member and trying to make it about what's best for the company. And what happens is my innate self-centered fear seems to creep in typically at some point every day where it's all about how I look. How am I going to look? How is this going to affect me? And I have to, what happens is I typically catch myself and I spend a few minutes with my God. And I ask for the power, the wisdom, and the divine intelligence to see the truth and to act unselfishly or whatever the prayer happens to be at that particular moment. The point is, it's prayer. And you can never underestimate the power of prayer. What I've learned to do when fear is on me, I mean, it's on me, okay? And so along with fear goes all these other, you know, beautiful characteristics that I have. And when I am so centered that I can stop, pause, and pray, ask God to remove the fear and direct my attention, the absolute truth is that I do find freedom. And it may be 10 minutes, it may be an hour, it may be at some point during the day where all of a sudden I stop and realize that that fear is gone. And all of a sudden it's like I'm reborn again. And you know, the book talks about power. That's power. For people who live their life just completely overwhelmed by their character defects, which were driven by fear. And we all know what it feels like to have that ball of anxiety in our gut and to be afraid of everything and to be able to find freedom from that alone is so powerful. And the book talks about a power that will solve all our problems. It's talking about solving the problem of me. I am the problem. And just to the extent that I work the three sides of this triangle, just to the extent that I go to meetings, that I try to give back, that I work the steps, that I give them away, am I able to access that power? Because when I stop doing this stuff, I lose the power. When I stop sharing in meetings, I share in meetings because I'm standing and witnessing the solution. When I'm not verbally giving the solution away, I'm a totally verbal person. When I'm not giving this away, I lose it. I love to give this message away. It's what makes my life what it is. It's incredible. I guess we all get whatever God has waiting for us when we get it. I've often said I wish I had found sobriety in this solution when I was 21 years old. My life would have been completely different. But my life is what it is, and what I have to give is a result of who I am. And that's my experience, good and bad. That's what makes me who I am today. That's what makes me uniquely useful to helping another alcoholic. That's what makes going to AA meetings vital. I tell you, if it was just about going to meetings, I wouldn't be going. It's not that interesting. I mean, I like everybody, but I mean, it's got to be more than this, you know? This is great, you know? Meetings like Burnersville are designed to create the enthusiasm to go out and actually do the steps. You know, this is a workshop-based meeting. It's all about the solution and what the 12 steps do for us. It's designed to get us excited enough to go out and say, I'm ready to go. Let's get some guys together and let's do the steps. That's what this meeting's for. To take what you hear here and take it back to your own meetings. And raise the level of accountability for sobriety. There's no accountability today in terms of sponsorship and sobriety. We have to try and, you know, introduce accountability to our groups in terms of carrying a message. I think I've shared enough. What I'd like to do is maybe leave the rest of the meeting for discussion. And maybe as a topic, maybe we could talk about accountability. Whatever that means to you, are you accountable? Do you find your group accountable to each other, your home group? Do you have sponsees that you hold accountable for finishing their events? That's an excellent thing to touch on. But accountability, you know, it's a thread that runs through the entire program. There's all different levels of accountability. Maybe you could use that as a kind of a topic to share, or if there's anything that you feel you need to share tonight, that you have a burning desire, then this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I appreciate the opportunity to share for all of you tonight. Thank you.